You are listening to the Myth TV Cast. Welcome to another exciting episode of the Myth TV Cast. My name's Pat DeVille. With me is my co-host, Dan Fry.
How's it going, Pat?
I'm good, Dan. How's everything with you, man?
Aside from a bunch of hardware failures recently, but I got a nice new pile of hardware sitting here that I'm going to build hopefully after the show, and we'll have something else to talk about on the next show. But tonight, we have a little something different.
Yeah, we have a guest with us, William Talkington. William, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So, William, can you give us a little background information on you? What do you do professionally, and what's your interest with Myth TV?
Professionally, a little bit of everything. I have a small company, and we do a little bit of AV stuff, a little bit of networking stuff, presentation systems for boardrooms. We also do a lot of satellite television systems, both residential and commercial, and we recently, we've been trying to integrate the two together a little bit better, bringing some of the open source projects that are available and kind of bringing that into our business line. You've got to find the right customer for it, though. You want to make sure that someone there on staff is kind of a techie that's willing to get their hands dirty and isn't afraid of the stuff. I mean, would you like me to talk about the recent project that's come up, or?
Sure. Go ahead.
Okay. We have one of our clients is a large boarding school in Delaware. They have a 1,600 acre campus, and it is basically 8th grade through 12th grade, high school, preparatory school. And currently, they have, because they have a lot of dormitories and different common areas where they need television service, they have kind of a hodgepodge system. I took over with them about 4 or 5 years ago when their previous contractor went MIA. And fixed quite a few things that were missing or wrong or always had problems. The last guy was there every month repairing. Kind of brought him up a little bit better equipment. One of the things I had mentioned to him about 4 years ago was, you know, hey, you're using a modulated cable system. You've got dishes all over the place. This is a 100-year-old campus with beautiful hand-cut stone buildings built by the DuPont family. And you've got satellite dishes all over the place. You've got a modulated system that doesn't really work. But your network infrastructure is great. You're broken to different zones. You have fiber leading everywhere. Why don't we start looking at Myth TV? And there's two IT guys there. They're both teachers there at the school, and one is the school is all Mac-based. Everything they do is Mac. They have X servers, and the one techie guy there is he's very open source at home, and he's all for it. The other guy who writes the checks is a little bit more hesitant, but as time has gone on, and me setting up a VPN to my home so that I can drag a client into his office and say, here you go, let's watch some TV. They finally started, let's say, funding a project to explore it. And they're really interested in just converting the whole campus now over to a Myth TV system. I guess a better explanation maybe of a modulated cable system. It's kind of what the cable company used to do years ago. if you can imagine at home, if any of your listeners have DirecTV or Dish Network, imagine taking a receiver and setting it to one specific channel, like let's say Cartoon Network, then taking the output of that receiver and running it into a modulator that sends it out on channel 20. And now take about 30 more of those receivers, stack them all together in a rack, and do the same thing on each one, and now you're sending an analog video feed out to the school. The problem we're having is some of these cable runs are 1,000 feet, some of them are a quarter mile long, or would have to be a quarter mile long to service, so we end up putting a whole different system in that building. And because of that, they are paying through the nose for their monthly cable bill because they literally have 30, 40, 50 satellite receivers going to provide this type of system. Now, with Myth TV, we would be able to make that a lot better. Currently, they have like 40 satellite receivers servicing 15 televisions, which just does not make sense. My proposal to them was, well, you know, hey, there's no reason for that. We could, at most, if you've got 15 TVs, we need 15 receivers and a really good Myth TV backend. So that's kind of where we're at. They've given me some initial funding to buy some equipment, do some testing, give them basically a front-end, back-end system that they can play with, and they're really looking forward to, over the summer break, me coming in and just ripping out everything they have and installing Myth TV.
So let me ask you, what are you looking to do? You looking to set up some recordings of network shows and have them running all the time and just have whoever set up to with a front end to be able to access the stuff on demand?
Well, that's one of the ideas, but what we're trying to do is we're trying to fix a problem they have. Remember I said that a lot of these TVs are 800 feet away from their head-in system. When you're sending an analog signal or the feed from the satellite dish to a receiver over 800 feet through regular coax, the loss is tremendous. And it's a struggle every day, every week to keep a clean picture. But every single room, every apartment, every dorm room in this school has a gigabit network connection. It's segmented on different VLANs and they've done a terrific job of that. So not so much the being able to, for the students to be able to record programming from the common rooms and play them back later, but really just the live TV feeds and being able to keep a clean picture across those distances. The other thing that we're trying to fix is right now it's all standard definition, and over the past 3 years I've sold them new Sony televisions for all the common dorm rooms, and they would like to upgrade to an HD service. For me to switch out all of their modulators to HD modulators, it's about $1,000 a piece. That in and of itself was going to be about twice the cost of the Myth TV project. So really with this, we're trying to cure the problem of bad picture quality, the need for satellite dishes on some of the remote buildings, to just really just clean up the appearance of the campus. And be able to do all of this from one central head end in one server room.
So what, I guess let's talk like tuners now. What do you plan to replace the satellite with? What type of tuners are you looking to use? Are you going with a cable card solution, or are you going with something that's more of like over the air or in card? You know, a card in the box type of a thing that you slap into a PCI, you know, express slot.
Well, that's one of the things we had talked about. Their campus does not have access to cable TV service, And okay. Verizon recently brought Fios onto campus, but they would only bring it into the main building, and they wanted a small fortune to run video feeds out to all the dormitories. So that's the reason why they've always had their own private cable system based on some type of satellite product.
Okay.
In the switch, we're going from Dish Network, which I am an authorized dealer, over to DirecTV, which I'm also an authorized dealer, mainly because of the serial control we would have over the boxes. And it's going to work out a little bit cheaper, and the way they interface with the dishes, it's going to be easier. The plan is a whole bunch of Hophog HD PVRs connected up, set up all the UDEV rules so that everything shows up the same each time. Serial control of the satellite boxes for channel changing, which I prefer that because the, you know, Myth TV tends to know when the satellite receiver's on and when it's off. You can do that with IR, but it's more difficult. We're also going to integrate some HD home runs because where they sit, they're literally 20 miles away from all the transmitters for Philadelphia, which are just over the bay in New Jersey. They also have a good shot for the Delaware stations because they're in Delaware, and also some of the Maryland stations come in quite well. So it's going to be a combination of both the Hophog DVRs and some of the silicone dust products. We're probably planning on putting in four of the dual tuners that they offer. Maybe even look at the new one that they have out.
Yeah, we're familiar with all those, all of the above. We've used the
Fios.
Go ahead.
Oh, sorry, Pat. Go ahead. No, I was going to say, does Fios offer the option for a cable card setup? It just to that one building where you would run this this master back end from?
Yes, they do. Well, not to the building where the master back end is, but there is a 10 gigabit fiber link between all of the buildings.
Oh, okay.
So
they have the nice six tuner cable card tuner that you could throw a bunch of them in there, and I would almost even say get rid of I know that this is what you're planning, but get rid of the serial control over the satellite boxes, because there would be literally no delay in like channel switching or anything like that.
Right. No, I understand that, but the issue they're going to have with that is the pricing that they had got from Fios for a commercial type account was going to be somewhere in the order, because of the type of campus they are, it was going to be somewhere in the lines of $1,200 a month.
Oh, wow.
Currently with Dish Network, they're paying $650, and that's mainly because the account was set up improperly. The alternative that I have with DirecTV, the 150-channel package, they have a program especially for dormitories or hotels, all HD programming. I come in right at about $130 a month.
Wow,
so
man. It's not even close.
Wow. that's incredible.
it's really about a tenth of the cost of what Verizon wanted. And I'll be honest with you, in this area, this is one of my main marketing areas for my Dish products. And I was going gangbusters before the Fios project came in. I mean, I couldn't keep up with the work. Fios came in, everyone switched over to it, my orders dropped. A year later, the orders started picking up again. And what I heard from all of the customers were, the internet service is great, but the TV service was lousy. And what they would say is, okay, so let's say little Johnny's on the computer, and he's on Napster downloading a bunch of bootleg music, or he's on Pirate Bay downloading some movies, and we turn on a TV in a bedroom, a TV in the living room, and then Dad's watching a football game in the basement. There would be a rolling blackout through the house, because all of that content is being streamed, and per house, they hadn't allocated enough bandwidth. And literally, there would be rolling blackouts, like five-second pauses rolling around from room to room.
That's terrible.
Inside that one house. And I started hearing that quite a bit, and my workload picked back up. So to be honest with you, the school has been happy with the 100 megabit per second pipe that they got for internet. But I don't want to really go down that road for 20-some tuners of cable, because even though I started getting my customers back about 3 years ago, I still get them back still hearing the same horror stories. So I just don't want to dive into that.
The other thing about Fios is I think they stopped rolling that out. They hit a certain number, and they just stopped completely.
Yeah.
Yeah, meaning like per area, they...
Yeah, they're not going into any more new areas, I don't think.
Yeah, there was some reasoning for that. I actually have family inside of Verizon that's management there, and I was actually a lineman, fiber splicer, systems tech for quite a while. The main reason for that was all the little townships got greedy. And because it was considered a non-essential service, the townships decided or realized that they could charge an exorbitant tax for running that line from pole to pole. And a lot of the little hungry townships stuck their hand out, and Verizon just quietly negotiated with them, and then all the areas that said yes, they hooked them up, and then they pulled the plug on the project, telling those communities, well, you know, they didn't charge us and you tried to, so we give up. This is where we stop.
So basically they're getting greedy, and that pretty much turned them off to the whole thing.
They saw Verizon coming in with a new product, and they wanted to fix their budget deficits, and you know, it backfired.
That's terrible. Not because of that, they have less choice in the area. That kind of stinks, you know.
Well, you've got what do you have up your way? RCN.
We've got this little company called Service Electric 2 that's also available.
Sure.
And of course,
very familiar with.
Yeah, and the satellite companies. I've been subscribed to all of them at different times. When I first moved into the house, I had Dish Network, and then for a while I had DirecTV, and then for a while I had Service Electric, and now I'm on RCN. And I've been on RCN for a good 5 years now. And
I've been on RCN, geez, now it's got to be the last 11, 12 years, I'd say. And on this in previous episodes, William, we've bitched plenty about RCN and some of their practices and whatnot. We haven't had any real good love for them.
Their service is okay, you know. I'm happy with the quality of it. It just seems that the price has been going up and up and up lately.
Yep.
Last was about a year ago, Dan, a little over a year ago.
I got mine just like 2 months ago that they did an increase.
Well, they did what they called an all-digital conversion, and they got rid of all the analog,
yeah.
And they forced everybody to use just the cable boxes. You know, for standard def and high def, and I think the prices have gone up since then, and it's noticeable. Well,
all the cable companies are doing that, and they also charge you. Like I know Comcast charges about $10 a month for each one of those boxes, and that drives a lot of business over to my residential side because you know when a base cable pack starts with them, $60-$70 a month, and then you've got four TVs and you're paying $10 for each box. You know, you're paying $120 a month just for basic TV service after the promotion.
Right.
You know,
that's why I like the cable card option now, since that's, you know, $299. I don't got to pay the TiVo tax. I don't got to pay, you know, for their HD box. Well, I do have one HD box, and that's just for an HD PVR 1212 that we have hooked up to it. And that's just for things like HBO and those types of channels. But the cable card option is really, really nice for people who just want to be able to, you know, set up a basic Myth TV, you know, install and be able to have up to three, two, you know, two, three recordings possibly going at the same time, you know, for a relatively cheap amount of money.
Yeah, and their cable card implementation's been pretty good. I can't complain about it. I've been very happy.
Yeah, it was. Minor setup hiccup, you know, on their back end head system, but otherwise everything else was completely flawless from the Myth TV aspect of it.
Yeah, and it's much easier setup, you know, with the old over the air, you know, with the HD Home Run. If you were doing either over the air or QAM, you know, you would have to go in and do like resolve all the channels based on the frequencies. You know, you would have to figure out what was what and do the resolution manually. With the HD Home Run Prime with the cable card, you don't have to deal with that at all. It's all there as soon as you set it up.
How do you plan to address that? How do you plan to address that? Because you mentioned, you know, some of the tuners that you're planning on putting in are going to be just over-the-air tuners, the HD Home Runs. How do you plan on addressing, like, the channel resolution, the changing frequencies, numbering them so that the people in these common areas can actually tune them, you know, appropriately so they're not looking at the... They usually have like a hyphen in it or something along that line. Are you going to remap those or what do you plan on doing?
Well, that's all part of the planning stage. And in the end, we don't know if we're going to definitely go with that. We may even break this down into a dual backend system or two separate systems running alongside of each other. Because one of the things that was... kind of mentioned in all this was that right now none of the teachers have televisions or cable service in their classrooms except for the foreign language classes, the Chinese, the French, the Spanish. They have TV setups for those particular languages. It's not totally settled on how we're going to do this. The common areas may be one Myth TV backends, and the teacher, the classrooms may be another. So it's still in the early planning stages. We really haven't hammered out all of those sort of issues and how we're going to present it to the actual end user. We may not even go with the HD Home Runs because frankly we can get all the local stations off of the satellite receivers. It was just kind of an idea because there are a few little pop-up upstart networks that have come on board that they may be interested in. One of the things I have to work out though is one of the things they're interested in is free-to-air satellite. Are you guys familiar with that?
No. Can you give us a little bit of a background what it is?
Okay. Remember back in the day when you had the great big West Virginia State Flower in the backyard, the 10-foot satellite dish, and just whatever you got off of it was free. It wasn't scrambled.
Sure.
Later on, they started scrambling things. Okay. All of that switched over to KU band, and it's those systems you can get away with about a 36-inch dish. There's one satellite in particular, Galaxy 25, that has probably close to 300, maybe even 400 channels of foreign broadcast television. Chinese, Taiwan, Philippines, German, French, you name it, it's there. All of this is available free. And European Myth TV users use the DVB-2 S2 tuner cards in their Myth TV backends to receive these channels. And in Europe, that's a common way of providing television service is through that type of satellite system. It's big in the UK and France. So they're interested in the foreign programming that's available through that satellite. And I've messed around with I actually have a card for receiving it. I've messed around with it, not in Myth, but in Linux and Windows, and works well. It's supposed to work with Myth TV, and that's one of the things that I have to work out between now and when I fire the system up is how to integrate that into the Myth backend. all in the planning stages right now. So
what provides guide data for that? But I mean, right now, because I'm not sure if I would see that on in my local setups for schedules direct or not.
It's not going to be.
It's not going to be. Okay.
No, the guide data is sent through the satellite, and on, like, they make set top receivers for that type of service. You can buy them here in the States and abroad. They do have a functional electronic program guide that gets streamed down through the satellite. And from what I understand, and I haven't dove too much into this because it's kind of back burner in this whole project. From what I understand, Myth actually will scan through the electronic program guide that's available, start to populate it. It's not as fast as Schedules Direct. I mean, it may take 2 days for it to completely fill.
Right.
But it is there and it is available.
It's running in the background and who cares? And how's it? You start it up and it populates and, you know, you'll have so many days worth of guide information. So that's interesting. And, so from the U.S., we would be able to watch programming off that Galaxy S satellite.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, actually, in the area that I'm at, actually make a good bit of coin. Most of the clients are down around the Washington Beltway. A lot of foreign doctors, dignitaries, they seek me out to install those systems with a set-top box in their home. It's free programming from their home country that, you know, they don't have to pay a subscription to. A lot of them really aren't interested in English programming, and what English programming they watch is coming in off-air.
That's actually pretty awesome that you're able to do that.
Pat, you set that up. You might get more soccer than you can deal with.
I already get a lot now. It's insane how much you can get nowadays compared to like 20 years ago.
There's definitely a lot of soccer there. You just you pick and choose the language of the sportscaster, though.
The Chinese are really bad about that. They're like they get feeds of everything.
Mm-hmm.
Does the U.S. Actually broadcast similar, you know, so that if you are like, an English speaking U.S. citizen over in one of these other countries, that you could set up something similar if you were in France or England or Germany or China?
Oh, yeah.
They do. They broadcast this signal, this free satellite signal.
A lot of the networks that we have here in the U.S., like take the U.K. for example, their TV's lousy. If it wasn't for a lot, you got BBC One, BBC Two,
ITV.
They do have a lot of our content available over there, be it through satellite. A lot of it is in different parts of the world is done quite a bit like Dish Network does. Or DirecTV, they provide foreign programming, things, pay channels that aren't available on these free satellites, premium channels from other countries. And basically they're getting satellite feeds locally in those countries and then sending it back through one of their relay satellites, back over to us and then rebroadcasting it up to their satellite that beams down to Dish Network or DirecTV customers. I could spend we could spend three more shows me explaining how all of that works.
Yeah, I've noticed that they have like, you know, they'll have like a Chinese package, an Arabic package, a Spanish package, a Filipino package, an Indian package.
Yeah, Dish is between the two. Dish is the one that caters the most. I believe they have 80 different language packages, where DirecTV has about 10.
Well, what were your thoughts? You got any opinions on when Dish Network and DirecTV were talking about merging? And any thoughts on that?
It'll never happen. It'll never happen.
Well, it got blocked by the FCC, right? Because of competitiveness, right? It's going to take away competition in the marketplace, right?
It was actually a vicious rumor that they were even trying. DirecTV is corporately... is big corporate. DirecTV, publicly traded company. Dish Network is owned by a guy named Charlie. And Charlie does things a little bit differently. It's the story of how Dish Network started is even a wild story. I don't think the two will ever merge. DirecTV is quite large. They are a huge company. Dish Network is also a huge company, growing and growing through acquisitions. DirecTV has almost twice the number of paid TV subscribers. Dish Network, on the other hand, owns Hughes Corporation, which owns, maintains, and operates most of the military's communication satellites, a good portion of the satellites, telecommunication satellites that orbit the Earth, and that's a whole other show also. They'll basically never combine. Dish owns Sirius. They basically own Howard Stern as well. But DirecTV is its own little thing. They're better than nobody else. But between the two, as far as you or I are concerned, they both have their strengths and weaknesses. If you're a sports fan, get DirecTV. If you're just looking for good cable service, not so big on the sports, want a lower price, Dish Network would be the one to go with.
So you think the cultures were just so different from each other that they really couldn't merge if they wanted to?
No. DirecTV is really, really corporate. Well, just as an example, the way Dish Network was founded, they were one of the service providers back in the days of the big satellite dishes. To start the company, Charlie Ergen, the owner of the company, who still is in charge in one way or another, was banned from Las Vegas. He raised enough money to start Dish Network by counting cards at the blackjack table.
Oh, God.
And he's very proud of this fact. Biographies written about him, it's explained in there. He's kind of a shoot from the hip when different networks, every 5 years, the contracts come up for the networks. You know, Dish Network pays X amount per subscriber for, say, ESPN. When they go to renegotiate the contract, the last time this happened, it was ESPN, Disney, and they basically went to Charlie and said, well, we want more money per subscriber, and he looked at him and said, I don't think you're worth it, and here's how much I'm going to pay you. And when they wouldn't accept it, he pulled the plug, and on every one of those channels, he ran a continuous video on what scumbags they were. and how they wanted each one of you subscribers to pay twice as much for ESPN as you would for HBO, and just constant. It was a half-hour video just constantly berating them. And then ESPN sponsors started to back out, and he did the same thing to NBC right during the popularity of Survivor, when it was at its highest ratings. And he pulled the plug on them and said, well, you know, overall, your networks, the ratings are in the tank, so actually I'm going to pay you less. And when they didn't go for it, he shut them off. So the cultures are a little bit different. DirecTV, when things like that come up, they extend the existing contract.
They send the lawyers.
you never really lose anything. It just seems with Dish Network, if you make Charlie mad, well, he'll pull the plug on you and tell the whole world or at least 16 million people what a scumbag you are.
At least the guy's got a pair, you know, and he's not afraid to, you know, stand up to them. I kind of appreciate that.
Yes, he does. So what are your, I mean, one of the reasons I wanted to come on here tonight was, you know, I use Myth TV at home. I've been very happy with it for 4 years. Now that it, you know, I worked out all the problems with the HD DVR and can't open change file buffer problems and everything else that were popping up. After that was all straight, the wife absolutely loves it. What are your thoughts, and what roadblocks do you think I might come up against installing a large system with, say, multiple slave backends, 20 plus tuners on the system, front ends galore?
Well, my question to you is what are you going to allow? Are you going to allow anybody who's on there to go in and schedule shows? Are you going to put any control mechanism in place, or are you just going to let them do whatever they want as far as setting up recording?
Well, that was one of the things we talked about. We would like to, if there's a way to disallow certain clients to schedule recordings, I don't know if there's a way of doing that in Myth TV. That would definitely be a plus. The way we were going to try and, you know, not worry about that was we were going to have a one-to-one ratio of tuners to front ends, so that even if somebody, you know, let's say everyone in the school wanted to record something, you know, at least each tuner, even if it was recording, it would say, well, hey, all tuners are busy, but this one's watching this show, so you can watch it in progress, or you can go back to the beginning. Are there any mechanisms in Myth that I haven't found for disallowing front ends to schedule recordings?
You can always go in and mess with the XML files that actually make up the menus and start removing out like the scheduling menu. I think they set up some profiles as to what whether you want to be able to do just watch recordings or just watch, you know, live TV or something like that. But you'd still have the remote control and somebody could be hitting. I mean, you'd have to go and make sure you remap all the keys so that they can't, you know, hit the record button on the remote control. As well as I want to say somehow disabling in the guide that they can enable recording on. I wonder if there's a way to flag a tuner to say, you know, allow it for streaming live content, but don't allow it to actually record anything. I'd have to look into that. I don't know that that's in there, but I wonder if something like that might exist in there in a setting that I'm just not thinking off the top of my head what it would handle. I think a lot of what you're going to run into as well is the I/O, the writing out all of this, because it does have to write to disk as a live stream, you know, pops up. It buffers so much of that. I would say you're definitely looking at multiple backends. I don't know what you're looking at for server hardware, you know, for backend hardware, multiple backends. You know, a couple of, you know, quad or even, you know, 8-core. What are some of those bulldozer cores up to now? Are they 8 cores? You know, you might be able to get away with some of those. I would definitely say NVIDIA-based cards on the front end so that you can utilize VDPAU to offload all of that processing to the local GPUs or to the GPU itself, you know, on the back end that's actually doing any streaming.
For the front ends, you might look at something like maybe get something like those Acer Revos or something along those lines, or even maybe getting a volume discount on like those Zotac boxes. Like I have a Zotac box and Dan has one too.
And
for a front end device, they're great. They're small, low powered form factor, fully, you know, they got NVIDIA graphics, they could do the VDPAU. It's pretty,
and I think you can even find something that'll allow you to take advantage of the VESA mount to mount them to the back of the TV as well.
Yeah, there's also the Acer Revos. They've come down in price. I haven't looked at them recently. I know on our Amazon page we had some front end stuff, right, Dan? I forget which model.
Yeah, there's a couple of those Z boxes on there from Zotac, which are small boxes, kind of like the Acer Revos. But the Zeba, I think one even has like a DVD drive and the other one doesn't. So which, if you want to enable, you know, DVD playback, you know, on the front ends as well, that's another thing. I'm not sure if we want to do that or not.
I don't think we were going to do that, because one of the things they want to be able to do also is control the content of what the kids can actually watch. So the DVD players on each unit was kind of out the window.
Yeah,
I was actually interested with Myth 25 announcing API support, and I've got in a VM, I've got a backend set up with an HD home run. I'm getting ready to slap together. I've got one of those AMD Hudson boards with the E350 Put in Radian chipset. I mean, the board was $75 from Newegg. I'm going to mess around with that to see how that works. As far as the I/O is concerned on the back end, I'm not too worried about it because, honestly, what I have here at home, I have four Hop Hogs HD PVRs hooked to a Supermicro Atom 330 machine with a 160 gig system drive and a 1 terabyte Western Digital green drive, whatever it is. I can record four streams at once. I can record, have four shows going and recording and play back.
Simultaneously playing back all four of those off of the same machine, right?
No, I'm not. But the plan was to have one hard drive for every two tuners in the main setup. So I don't think that I/O is going to be that great of a problem. And yes, we were planning on multiple backends. Having maybe, on my Supermicro setup, I have all four of the Hop Hogs on one USB bus. Not having any problems with it, not having any real issues with it. As far as I/O data throughput, and when I go into system monitor to look, CPU usage is generally only sitting right around 50%. So it's just a straight back end machine. I'm booting it at lower run levels, which is just coming up in command line for most of the time, but really not taxing the machine. And I just figured if a real quad core machine, healthy amount of RAM, and a good number of hard drives in it, I'd probably get away with a good number of tuners. Since I'm getting away with four now on a lousy Atom 330, it's the biggest issue for me is definitely going to be, how do I limit the users from being able to schedule recordings? And really, that's my only concern as far as the operational standpoint for the different users. Anything is going to be better than what they have now.
Right.
What they have now, they're constantly trying to make the picture better, or get the picture to come back.
Well, you can definitely limit programming by either going into Schedules Direct or just taking away the visibility on the channel in MythWeb,
right?
For those channels, that type of stuff. I would also say don't allow for commercial flagging, because that would be all CPU, and if you're trying to get, some of those, the HD home runs, you can virtualize them to have four tuners going at one time on those. That may be enough to drag down some of the system as well, all the real time commercial flagging and that type of stuff. I'm just trying to think.
Well, one of the other things that was discussed,
prevent the recordings.
One of the other things that was discussed is they have a set of VMware servers where a lot of their applications are running for the school. They're very interested in setting up something with Proxmox. Eventually, we'll be setting up an Asterisk-based phone system for them as well, and we're going to try and paravirtualize that, which I do here at home. If the number I sent you an email, if you call that, that's a PBX in a flash virtualized. I was thinking we're still going to be doing the COM flagging, but that's going to be pushed off to some virtual backends. Doesn't matter if it takes a long time. It's not going to be set for default. Basically, when one of the teachers wants to use a program for educational purposes, she'll know to go into MythWeb and tick the box for COM flagging, so that her program will be commercial free when she goes to play it back.
Yeah, my experience looking at like the HD Home Run and the HD Home Run Prime and the PVR 1212 is that the shows recorded on the PVRs, the COM flagging tends to take much longer almost as long as the time of the actual show. For instance, you know, if I have an hour recording with the PVR 1212, the flagging takes almost that long to complete. Whereas with the HD Home Run stuff, once, you know, it's done fast, like 5 to 10 minutes on my system. It's just something, okay. Just something to keep aware. I've noticed it.
Maybe it has something to do with
the file types, my guess is, because it's an HD64.
Yeah, either the file types or I don't know. I mean, they're both using H.264, aren't they?
No, the HD Home Run, and I think it's MPEG 2 they're using.
What, over the air is MPEG 2?
I believe so. And the cable stuff is all MPEG 2.
Yeah, I never looked into it. Yeah, maybe that would be a question for Mr. Robert that you had on a couple of shows ago, as far as setting up recording permissions on different clients.
Yeah, I would definitely, if I were you, I would definitely talk to some people on the MIFTV users mailing list, and maybe even the devs. And I haven't looked about, you know, I haven't researched what a large scale implementation would be like, but I'd be very curious to see what's involved, what the limitations are. You know, it sounds like what you're doing is very interesting. I'm sure somebody's done it, you know.
This project's been on the back burner for years, and I've searched high and low through Google, and I have found no blog posts, no information whatsoever of a setup using, I think the largest one I ever found was someone using four HD, you know, HD PVRs, some analog stuff, and just in their home, nothing on like a real, the size of what I'm doing, eventually 20 tuners.
If I were you, I would go to the dev list and ask them some questions.
Yeah.
As far as the scalability.
There is another option here, and this will probably take a little bit longer to implement, but the new Myth Services API is rolling out. It should be now, I believe it's April 9th is when they're planning on releasing. So Monday is when the 0.25 is supposed to kind of go live, right? I know one of the things that I'm planning on doing with that is finally getting back to developing the Android, you know, front end for that. And you could always actually, you know, implement some type of a custom front end where you control how much, you know, you can and can't do with the thing, you know, because it in a sense is going to be a little box that just ends up streaming. So even say something like the Raspberry Pis or something like that, you just mount a little box to the back of the TV, you know, and you provide the custom front end to that. And that's if you compile down like the Android code base and give it a really stripped down, you know, set of features, that the only thing that it can really do at that point then is connect to a MythTV backend. You could probably do this with like a Fedora spin or you know, a Debian spin or something like that as well. But utilizing strictly just the services API and only allowing them to activate live TV streams and stuff like that.
And also, you know, we mentioned Robert. Robert's worked on the iPad front end, and that looks real slick what he's done with that.
Yeah.
Does that have the capability of streaming live TV yet, or is that even?
I believe it does. I think he's going to be implementing that if it doesn't. But I thought that some of the YouTube videos, and it's been a while since I looked at them, I thought that some of them had the options for live TV there as well. But like I said, it's been a while.
Somebody caught up an Android front end, and I've been playing with it, and I'm able to watch live TV if I want off my HD Home Run Prime streamed to my phone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just loaded that up on. I've got a Droid Bionic in my hand, and it is. Oh, I just downloaded that app today. It'll connect my back end, and I'm running 242, and I wasn't really able to do much with it. It's a Myth front end. The icon for it's just a kind of an old timey cartoon TV picture.
Yeah.
Right.
It's not working. I'll figure out what's going on with it. It's connecting to it.
What the problem with that is, the guy's has it closed, and it sounds like certain hardware that people have that have issues with it. You know, I got it to work on mine. I have an LG G2X. I'm running stock Gingerbread, and it works. And on my Myth setup, I'm running 0.24.2, and I'm able to watch my recordings. I'm able to stream archive videos. I'm able to watch live TV. So, you know, the thing is,
I switched all my videos to MKV, and none of them stream.
Yeah, the MKVs don't work, but the other stuff that I have coded up, like Xvids or some of the other stuff, that works.
Yeah.
You know, and the problem is again, it's closed, so, you know, people can't just jump in and start doing updates to it.
I'm really excited about the new 25 API. I need to let you guys know I am not a coder. I am, you know, if you've got an office building and you need to, you know, get reliable gigabit networking to 1,000 clients in your office and build a rack, I'm the guy that you would call. I would set up all of that, get the hardware working, get everything talking, cable the building. I'm not a coder. That's not my thing. I've always been the hardware guy. I know enough about the software that I can make things that work. I can do light scripting, things like that. But as far as actually any type of programming language, really getting in there and creating an app, it's just not my thing. Maybe it's my ADD that I can't sit still that long. but it's not going to happen. I'm really hoping to see, and Robert's front end for the iPad, one of the things I would really, really love to see is that on the Apple TV 2 or the third generation. That would be $100 Myth TV front end client. If he had an app available in the App Store to go on that thing, $100 gets you up and running with, you know, a 1080p capable or you know, 720, depending on the one you get.
There's also a Roku front end. I haven't played with it. I do have a Roku box, but I haven't tried setting up the Myth front end on it. I don't know how good it is.
I believe there's also one for XBMC as well.
Yeah, and I mean, a Roku box. You can get the low-end Roku box for like $50-$60.
Well, but does it do live streaming, live TV?
I don't know. I haven't played with it.
Well, it's using the old Myth protocols that are in there, but I assume that as soon as, you know, 25, you know, .25 becomes, you know, readily available, that you'll start seeing, you know, new front ends popping up, you know, for this and that, so that you'd be able to put them onto virtually any device, which is that's what I think is going to be the biggest draw for it. Now, I'm personally planning on making that app available for, you know, Google TV, for, you know, Android tablets, Android, you know, phones, that type of stuff. So, I mean that right there, I mean, if you can pick up like a Logitech, you know, a bunch of Logitech Google, you know, Google TVs, unfortunately they're kind of going away, but LG, I believe, LG, I believe, or Vizio, I think it's LG, is going to have one that's going to be roughly be for around $100. So, you know, eventually, once I, you know, get the time to work on that, that's when that will be, you know, available across all of those devices, hopefully.
Let me ask you, William, what are you running on your home system? Are you running a Myth-specific distro like Mythbuntu or Linhas, or you built everything yourself?
Yeah, I originally started with MythDora, and it just, no support there, and you know, recently that's completely gone away.
Yeah, I believe it's a dead project now.
It is a dead project, and then I compiled my own, because I was running and still run, but now virtually. One of my NAS boxes here was a Mahi, and it's a great project. It's Fedora based, and I was one of the devs over there that started to kind of put together a package to be one of their one-click install apps for Myth TV, and realized that would be something. Problem. Yeah, I mean, Myth TV just changed too much, and they've got their own way of setting up MySQL for their stuff, and it was a pain in the butt. It was just easier for me at one point to just load from the source, put it on my Mahi machine. Since then, about 3 years ago, I just went all Mythbuntu. And anyone else interested in Myth TV, I highly recommend it. I tried Nopic Myth or whatever.
Not Myth, which became Linhas.
Right. Mythbuntu, you put the CD in and you install it, and it's done. Other than configuring your capture cards, you don't have to worry, oh, did I set up this database right? Did I do this? Did I do that? You just load the distro and you're done. It's great. It's got some bugs, like everything else, but nothing that, you know, the people in the groups can't help you work around. You know, that's my soapbox. Go with Mythbuntu.
We both run Mythbuntu. We like it a lot.
Yeah.
The only thing is, though, for something that you're trying to do, you may want to talk to Cecil Watson, who's the main guy from the Linhouse project. He's very knowledgeable. He's a very experienced programmer, and he's got a lot of insight, Cecil.
Cecil Watson?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
If you'd like, we can...
He's out on the West Coast.
Yeah, he's based out of L.A.
You should be able to hit him in their forums. Yep, the Linhouse forums, which they're great, too, just for hardware alone. You know what I mean? For what people have run into with different hardware and stuff like that. But yeah, he knows a lot about, you know, underlying MythTV, packaging it all up, you know, that type of stuff. He's, you know, basically spun that whole distribution for the last, what's he been doing it since, like 2003 or something like that?
He used to be Debian-based, but now he's gone to like an Arch-based system, Arch Linux, mm-hmm. and it's a much lighter footprint, and he could do quite a bit with the packaging and whatnot.
Yeah. Well, like I've said several times, it's all in the planning stages. You know, whatever I can do, even if I have to, and they're not opposed to actually, you know, maybe at some point paying a coder to kind of customize the front ends the way they want it. I'm hoping between now and this summer, when this project really gets underway, you know, the school's empty. I'm hoping that some other front ends pop up. You know, maybe something, you guys mentioned XBMC, it's buggy. If you're running 2.3, it's great. If you're running 2.4, that's been a fight. They never kept up with the database changes. There are two working, plugins for, XBMC. I haven't had too much luck with either one of them. I got one working, and then it worked fine, and then every other day it was crashing my back end. And it's not something I would wish upon, you know, a production ready or a production system. That's why I pretty much decided I want to stick with just straight up Mythbuntu front end clients. But it's all planning. And, you know, the project may get bigger, it may get smaller than what they're talking about. They're really just in the exploration stages right now.
Yeah, it sounds like you want to customize the front end to limit the functionality. That sounds like that's a key thing for you.
Yeah.
And also, you know, what are you going to record and how to control it?
Right.
Yeah. Or if there was a way of just limiting, you know, not allowing any of the front ends to record, only allowing that to be done through MythWeb and then passwording MythWeb, that would be, you know, that would be great, because then only the teachers would have access to recording things.
Well, that's basically there with the Mythbuntu Control Center now. Right through that interface, you can just say enable a password on MythWeb, and then you don't ever have to worry about it again. It just handles it for you. Again, yeah. I still don't know how to disable that from the front end point of view. It'd be kind of tough. But I think it would definitely be possible. You know, as an even like maybe there's some type of a front end that could be created that say like an education based front end so that you can disable that type of stuff. You know, something along that line. Yeah.
Maybe through key mappings, I could get rid of the record button. I could get mm-hmm. rid of the program guide button, because they really don't need the guide. They don't have one now, so it's not like they'd be missing it.
Yeah.
All the menus are XML files, and they're very easy to go in and hack them up.
Right.
Yeah.
And LIRC is really easy to say, you know, no longer enable a remote, you know, a button mapping on the remote control. So.
Yeah. Well, maybe that's how I would do it, is just, you know, not allow the record button and not allow the on-screen guide or a way to get into it, and that would basically keep them from being able to record. They wouldn't have use of the guide. And then maybe later on, if someone came up with a more customizable front end, I'll have to look into it. I definitely have to look into it.
Yeah. I'm thinking if you're up for it, William, I don't know, maybe Pat and I take a little road trip down to see this whole thing once it's finally underway.
I'd love to see talk to you about it and check it out.
This would be really something to see, a large-scale implementation of MythTV.
Well, I'll definitely see if I can arrange that. Just give you an idea of the school that we're working with. I'm not going to say the name of it on here. I haven't spoke to them, but do you remember the Robin Williams movie, Dead Poets Society?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
This school is where it was filmed.
That's pretty cool.
So it's, as I get into different rooms in the place, I have little flashbacks to the movie. Oh, yeah, this is where they, and the cave where they kind of huddled in the rain to read poetry or whatever in the movie. It's actually an electrical closet under the boathouse. It's kind of neat, but it's the building's got a lot of history. It was built by Felix DuPont back in the early 1900s. Gorgeous campus. They've got their own lake, rowing team, tennis courts, swimming pools. I mean, I would have loved to have gone there when I was in high school. I'd probably too dumb to get in, but you know, I would have loved to go on there. There's just so many things to do there. It's a great school, and they really keep up with the technology there. I mean, I won't hold it against them that they use Macs, but they've got quite a few of them.
Well, I mean, I think me and you get along pretty well.
Yeah.
You're right up my alley.
I mean, they Macs are nice. They're, well, my opinion of a Mac is, why would you pay three times as much for something when you can get just something just as good if you buy straight up laptop and put Ubuntu on it?
Sure. Yep. I agree 100% with you. And the thing I don't like about Apple stuff, you know, it's, even when I was a kid, you know, there was the one kid that I knew that had an Apple II, you know, he was the rich kid. He was the snob, and that air of elitism is still around with them. I don't know. It's like a brand, you know.
Every time they take from the open source community, and they never give anything back. So I mean,
exactly.
Yeah.
Every time I see somebody, you know, you see the typical Mac user with a 17-inch MacBook Pro under his arm. He's got one of those goofy haircuts where it's shaved on one side and hangs down over his eyes on the other.
He's a hipster, urban hipsters.
Yeah, his name's Dieter, and if you talk to him. And I have a minimalist apartment. It's a beautiful flat with all white walls and one silver piece of furniture in the middle of the room is where I put my MacBook.
I'm with you.
And the IT guys from the school are going to listen to this podcast later. So, hi, guys. that's all right. I'll catch heck for it later on Facebook.
It sounds like a real interesting project, and I wish you the luck. I recommend you go talk to some of those devs, talk to Cecil, talk to some of the MythTV developers, and tell them, you know, describe what you want to do, and they might give you some pointers in the right direction. And it almost sounds like you do want some kind of a customized front end system.
And you might even want to hit up the Ubuntu, you know, the guys who package up Mythbuntu.
Yeah, Mario Limoncello.
They did all of that new interface when Myth 23 came about, which is that black theme they produced all of that stuff, and they wanted, you know, everybody else kind of wanted that theme for a while there. So it might be worth talking to those guys as well, just to kind of see what it took for them to go in and customize all of that.
Even if we could just require a PIN number before recording,
parental controls. So that, I wonder if even something like that might help out in there.
Yeah, I don't know. I'll dig into it. I mean, a PIN number for recording might be nice. But it'd probably be easier just to eliminate the on-screen guide.
Yeah, the menu.
Yeah.
Yeah, and just, yeah, you know, block off all the USB ports so they can't plug any keyboards into it and do it that way.
Yeah.
Well, well, it was great talking to you. I think we, you know, we'd love to, we'd love to talk to you again in the future. To be honest, it's, it sounds like a real interesting project.
Yeah, please keep us up to date. Keep us up to date on how this project is going. I'm really looking forward to seeing, you know, how it all kind of plays out.
Well, I'm going to. Are you both on Skype or is one of you on a landline?
Right now, we both are on SIP lines.
Yeah, we're on an Astros box actually.
We have a. I don't know about you, but I have a. Skype account as well. It's the same as my email that I've been emailing you back and forth with.
Okay. I called in on Skype. I was going to send you an SMS through it with my website. I plan, and I, no laugh, the website. I've never really had one or needed one. Tonight I started a blog roll on it, and I'm going to kind of chronicle this and some other things that I do. So I'll email you both a link to my website. I can just give it here. It's CecilHD.com is one of the redirectors that will get you to it. It's easier to remember that. CecilHD.com. And it's just a WordPress site that I threw up a couple of days ago. It's actually on a regular hosting account, not on WordPress itself. But I'll be updating some stuff here, probably changing my template here soon. This, like I said, this was last night, like 1 a.m, I threw something together and I called it a web page. So, and anyone else using, WordPress, Artisteer, it's a Windows-based product, but if you don't like coding and you want to point and click, make your own template, and you don't want to do it online, it's worth the $50. It's a great product. But it's Windows only.
Well, we'll definitely throw this your website into the show or the feed here so that people when they do get it they can go check it out.
Okay. And I'm going to make sure that I leave comments open. Let me just check here. Yep, you can leave comments on the site. So, as I start posting things, if anyone has information for me or heck, even if you just heard the podcast here and you've got some ideas on how I can tackle some of the issues, by all means, contact me. I'm all ears.
Definitely hit up the mailing list, the MIT TV users, and also the MIT TV dev mailing list. Those are good places to go to too. Also, you can go in there and read the archives. It's, you know, they archive all that stuff, but you'll definitely get feedback immediately in both those places.
Will do.
Well,
all right, guys, well, it's been nice.
Excellent.
Thanks. Thank you very much, William, for coming on.
Thanks.
Yeah, maybe next time I'm up in Epic Cabela's, we'll stop and get a cup of coffee sometime.
Sure.
Sounds good.
All right, talk to you all later.
Take care.
See ya.
All righty. That was William. And
that is some
real interesting,
really interesting stuff.
Yep. Dan, you want to...
The biggest Myth TV, you know, installation I think that I've heard to date. So it's really something, really looking forward to seeing how that works out.
Sounds epic, man.
Oh, yeah.
I'd love to be part
definitely.
Of that.
Yeah, I know.
Good stuff. Do you have anything to add, Dan, or you want to wrap it up? We're already over now.
No, I'll wrap it up for now. I'll save my new hardware for the next
time. Excellent. So we'll probably do a show sooner than later. It's, you know, once Dan is done with his build, I'm sure he'll be chomping at the bit to tell us.
I'm hoping to build that bad boy tonight. So
excellent.
And if anyone wants to see the hardware that I've used, it's all listed in the store. So go check that out.
Excellent.
On the Myth TV Cast website. So
excellent. All right, guys. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you real soon, and that'll be it. Good night.
All right. Later.